This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Shouldn't you be at home?
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I'll have a low-fat pizza or something like that, or a few biscuits and some milk on a Sunday.
And you can pair up if you like, and you can fucking pick someone else to help you, and you can bring your fucking dinner.
Panister and Bruce in the queue again. Bruce scores!
Now, you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly, yes or no?
Yes.
Tony Hatton!
No!
Hello and welcome back to Now That's What I Call Quickly, Kevin. I'm Chris Gold. Joining me, Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And the man who wasn't Ian Wright's favourite teacher at school, it's Michael Marden.
Hello.
Love that clip. He talks about it on Desert Island Discs, if anyone's interested in hearing that.
Apparently his Desert Island Discs is a complete tearjerker. We've discussed this though, have we?
Have we?
No, I discussed it with someone.
You're cheating on us. You're cheating. You're having 90s football conversations outside of us. That is.
I am, yeah. And apparently Ian Wright's Desert Island Discs is absolutely magnificent and is a real nice make weight when you consider his behaviour on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
It made amends. And the way he treated Peter Schmeichel all those years.
So I've got a question for you before we go into our correspondence. How often are you checking the football news headlines these days?
Not at all. And actually,
really?
I watch the sport update with like a morbid curiosity. So I'm just like, what are you going to talk about today? Things getting moved or cancelled.
It's weird, isn't it? Because obviously my kind of default, one of my default crutches on my phone was like to check the football news. And now it's just completely gone from my life. And it's very quick how you can totally kind of write football out of the narrative of your life when it was quite central to it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm still checking the BBC transfer gossip page every day.
Are you? Is that still going?
Yeah, partly out of sort of muscle memory, but also just sort of morbid fascination or this need for some kind of football speculation. The thing that surprised me is how quickly like FPL was such a big part of my week, and for 2 weeks it was like
Fantasy Premier League.
Yeah, Fantasy Premier League. And for 2 weeks I was like I'd lost a limb.
Have you furloughed your team, Michael?
Yeah, well, it's because the game weeks are still running. This is so boring, but the game weeks are still running because they can't rewrite the software. So you get a free transfer every week. So essentially everyone's got like a free wild card. You can just rebuild your team, but it's pointless because you don't know who's going to be in form. You don't know who's going to be at what club, what's going to happen. So it's sort of entirely redundant.
It's so weird, isn't it? I love trying to understand how it's affected my relationship with football. The other thing I was thinking about was like, do you think when everything restarts, like, the managers that were under pressure are still going to be under pressure, or do you think you get a bit more of a honeymoon period?
I was talking about this today.
How quick until someone gets sacked?
I think you're going to have a bit of grace.
Yeah, I think so too. Annoyingly, I think Solskjaer's going to keep the job now. I was like, damn it. I thought we might get Poch, but now, no chance.
Well, poor old Poch, he thought he was going to have 3 months out of the game.
Can't even go on holiday. He's still probably stuck in North London. I find myself, like, I will flick on Sky Sports, but what I've discovered is I've got no interest in any kind of contemporary football anymore. I've got no interest, really, in any kind of replays of games from the last, like, 3 years. 2009, maybe 2010, and before, I watch everything. I'm really into it.
Do you know what? It's proven that I'm interested in football from the past. I know we all knew that, but
so you've satisfied yourself.
We are aiming, we should say to the viewers, in catching up to viewers, listeners, in catching up over these kind of lockdown weeks with guests that we've had on previously, like friends of the show, to see how the lockdowns affected them as football fans. They'll give advice on old football that you could watch to kill the evenings, and they'll talk to us about which players, you know, they're most excited about seeing once the lockdown's over, stuff like that. So that will be coming up as part of all of our lockdown specials. But before that, here is some correspondence.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
Three emails all about Panini's rising, Merlin's rising stars. So you know how I asked last week for people to do some research for us on the Merlin rising stars of 1994, 95, was it? To run you through them again, Ian Selly, Steve Froggatt, Darren Eady, Jamie Forrester, Darren Caskey, Neil Shipperley and Neil Bartlett. The Merlin's choice of the seven nailed on certainties for football stardom. So Patrick Isit has done us a favour. Hi, guys. After hearing last week's list of rising stars, I decided to get to work on the research task, which was frankly the most exciting thing I've done in weeks. After a bit of digging on various websites to make sure we weren't doing England's next generation of stars any disservice, I've compiled a spreadsheet which makes excellent viewing.
Brilliant.
In fairness to Ian Selly, he did break his leg twice in the space of three seasons, either side of his move to Fulham for £500,000. Enjoyed uncovering the developing careers which saw Neil Bartlett quit football for a role in the army in 1997, and Jamie Forrester swapped Scunthorpe United for FC Utrecht before returning to Walsall. Hope this is of some use. So I'll run you through them. Do you know what? I'm going to do it on Premier League appearances. I'm going to do a kind of higher-lower. Play Your Cards Right. Can we have the Play Your Cards Right theme tune, please, Michael? Okay. Chris, are you ready to play your Merlin Stars of the Futures right?
I'd love to, Brucey.
We're going
to
do it on Premier League appearances. Your first card is Ian Selly. Is Steve Froggatt higher or lower than Ian Selly's 41 Premier League appearances?
Got to be lower.
You've lost.
What? Really?
Michael, the game's passed to you. Steve Froggatt, 75 Premier League appearances.
Wow.
Darren Eady, higher or lower than 75?
Oh, that's tricky, because he featured, but I don't know that Norwich were in the Premier League enough. So I'm going to say... lower.
Oh, my God, what a waste of a game. It was higher.
How many?
81, it was close.
Come on, mate, it's close.
This back to Chris. Someone's got to get it right. Darren Eady's 81. Jamie Forrester, higher or lower?
Lower.
Correct. Darren Caskey, higher or lower than Jamie Forrester's 9?
Oh, that's going to be really tight.
It's not that tight.
No, I'm going to say higher then.
Yes, 32, Darren Caskey. Neil Shipley, higher or lower than Darren Caskey's 32?
Higher.
149 Premier League appearances. Neil Bartlett, higher or lower than Neil Shipley?
Lower.
Lower it was. It was 8. There you go. So the honours, Ian Selly, he ran an FA Cup, a League Cup and a UEFA Cup Winners' Cup.
Yeah, we had a lot pretty of people good. Tweeting about that he played in the Cup Winners' Cup final.
Steve Froggatt won the League Cup.
Yeah.
Darren Eady is anointed into the Norwich City Hall of Fame.
Where's Eddie Mike?
Oh, yeah, where is Eddie Mike? They haven't got Eddie Mike down here.
Where's the data?
I think it's our fault we didn't read out Eddie Mike. The three emails we've got, none of them have mentioned Eddie Mike. I must have made the mistake when doing the call-out. I do apologise. So, a new call-out. Can we have all the information possible on Eddie Mike?
Yeah, someone wants to go for his bins.
Well, do you remember, this is a great bit of 90s trivia that I don't think we've mentioned before. Do you remember that there was a big scoop that Shearer was being linked with Man United because someone had found the tickets for a plane journey Manchester United were about to take, and Alan Shearer's name was on it. And it turns out that what they'd done is kind of set a trap. They'd put this document in their bins to prove their theory that a journalist was going through their bins.
Wow.
So a big front story scoop.
So
Alan Shearer is going to start.
Yeah,
they entrapped the journalist. That was in the 90s.
That's
amazing. I'm sure that's not a false memory. I'm sure that happened.
So we've got a couple more people who've sent in stuff about these people because people got absolutely fascinated by them. This is from Luke Williamson. Darren Eady was called up for England and was expected to make his debut in Le Tournoi in 1997. However, he got injured and missed out and never featured again for the England first team.
Really? That's mad. I never thought he was that close.
Well, get this. Steve Froggatt was also called up for England in 1999 wow. during his time at Coventry.
99?
For the Euro 2000 playoff with Scotland, but he was an unused sub.
Wow, that is mad. So much later than I would have thought.
It's mad, isn't it?
I love that. There is the odd outlier, though, isn't there, playing for England? I always think of, like, Chris Powell. Every now and again, you get, like, an absurd player. I actually watched the other day the highlights of when England beat Germany 5-1. Do you know who played in, I think it was left midfield. Do you know who's playing in left midfield?
No.
It's 11. Nick Barmby. That's a different era. He shouldn't be in that team. That's a mistake. It's a glitch in the matrix.
He's a very forgettable player, isn't he, Nick Barmby?
He played for England.
He went to Liverpool, didn't he? Kind of had this kind of late rise in his career.
Yeah, I think he's one of the biggest forgettable players, Nick Barmby. Like, he is a high profile player, moves for a lot of money, England caps, big clubs, but unless you'd mentioned him, I'd forgotten Nick Barmby even existed.
Totally agree. So there you go. There's
amazing.
A lot of interesting facts on those. If you've got anything on AD Mike, this is how to get in touch.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list at quicklykevin.com.
And I had another bit of correspondence. So earlier last week, we tweeted, who was better, did a little Twitter poll, John Collins or Collins John. I'm delighted to reveal that John Collins won with 74.3% of the vote. However...
And I hope so.
We got a reply on the thread to this from a guy called Adam Nathan, who says that he's got a game that he plays with his mates who are @11goody and @DM723. And the game is putting players' names in sequences. And I have to just give you what he's come up with to kind of demonstrate how this game works. So he's got the following sequence of names: Stern, John, Collins, John, O'Shea, Given. So that's six individual names, and he's strung together. So I think
you're allowed to use the second bit of the surname because he's not called O'Shea Given.
No, yeah. So I think what I would like to do is invite the listeners to see if you can string together a longer line of players' names than that six, which is Stern, John, Collins, John, O'Shea, Given. We will accept O'Shea.
And we should say there will be bonus points for the heavily leaning on the 90s.
Yeah.
Got very little interest in anyone post 2007. Thank you very much. Okay, now it is time to look back into the Nostalgia Football podcast. It really is eating itself. Do you remember that time when we remembered something? It is. Now that's what I call Quickly Kevin.
First up, Alex Brooker tells us about his worst Arsenal 11 of the 90s.
So, in goal, we've got Vince Bartram.
Vince Bartram.
Oh, yes.
Vince Bartram.
So, I think with each one, we should say to Skull... That name, what do you know?
So when I think of Vince Bartram, I think of your black and grey goalkeeper's kit with a star in the middle.
Yes.
And the other thing I think is that he was quite good. I remember him. I think he might have played against West Ham. But I remember thinking, the thing about Arsenal is you've always had good sub keepers throughout the ages. Like even when Seaman came in, John Lukic was number two. I'd have said he was all right. And do you remember Alex Meninga, for God's sake?
Alex Meninga was incredible.
What I liked about Alex Meninga is he looked like he was about 15, so you could kind of imagine like it just being like one of your mates in goal.
Yeah.
He kind of looked, and the way he used to like dive on everything, like you do when you're like a kid. That's what.
He had very rouged cheeks, didn't he, Alex
Meninga?
The other thing that hasn't really come up on our podcast is that I grew up thinking substitute goalkeepers were rubbish, and it was a massive advantage if a substitute goalkeeper came on. This may have been influenced by Sensible Soccer, where the sub goalies were always rubbish.
Yeah.
So Vince Bartram, I'm sure I saw Vince Bartram play games and thinking, well, Arsenal are going to concede four or five here. And that never happened. So maybe I'm like...
For Vince Bartram, the problem was that David Seaman was just really good, so he was never ever gonna get in the team. My trivia for Vince Bartram is that he later went on to play for Gillingham, and his career ended when he got a wrist injury because he collided with Tony Warner, the goalkeeper. I think it was from Millwall, had come up for a corner in the last minute.
And they collided.
Injured colliding with another goalkeeper.
That's got to be a
what a way to bring the curtain down.
Also, Tony Warner was a kind of reserve at Liverpool, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
There was kind of that... It was a bit of a circuit, like you had Tony Warner. Liverpool also had Mike Hooper. Do you remember Mike Hooper?
Yeah. Didn't he play for Newcastle?
Yeah, I think he went on to be a reserve keeper at Newcastle.
It's one of the most compelling characters in football, I think. When you know you're never going to be first-choice keeper.
Yeah.
Like the third-choice keeper at Chelsea. Like Cudicini was there for years and didn't play. Like, what's your daily routine? Like, what goes on?
I'm from Green at Chelsea.
Yeah, well, Richard Wright ended his career at City as their first choice goalkeeper. I'm like, how? I imagine, right? Do you reckon if they'd have had like WhatsApp back then, they'd have had like a little WhatsApp group between
what, the reserve
like,
goalies?
Reserve goalie WhatsApp group, and they're just all slagging off. You know, it's like, oh God, Steve Grizovic is doing my nutting today. He's really hoping he's going to get a thumb injury or something like that.
I'd love to know the money to games ratio. Like, who earned the most money but played the least games?
Yeah.
Richard Wright must be a contender.
Richard Wright, definitely.
Yeah. My favourite thing about reserve, I think Cudicini. Cudicini, didn't he go from Chelsea to Spurs and stay as reserve goalie?
Yeah, he was.
Maybe he's just a great lad. Like, he's really good to have around the dressing room. My favourite thing a reserve goalie can do is when it cuts to the bench and they're wearing the gloves. Why are you wearing that? You have time.
I've got a little reserve goalie bit of trivia or factoid. My dad sponsored the match ball, West Ham versus QPR 1994, and we got into the ground for a tour at 12 midday. The kickoff was 3. Get in there at 12. Les Seeley, our reserve goalie, was already strapped up, boots like shin pads on, ready to go 3 hours before the game.
Where was he? Rest of the team?
No one was in the dressing room. It was a tour of the dressing rooms. He's already in there, strapped up, ready to go. No one else around.
That's a difference then. The reserve goalie was ready. Now, you see a reserve goalie, if they think the keeper's in, it's like they look as if to say, you're joking, I've got to come on.
Did you ever see Vince Bartram play?
Yeah, I must have seen Vince Bartram play. I can't remember it, but I know that he wasn't like very good, and like apparently they used to cheer when his goal kicks went further than the halfway line.
That's going to knock his confidence.
But he came from Bournemouth, and he just, I always think it's a sign of players where they come from and then where they go straight back to.
Yeah.
And he came from like a lower league and then he went straight back down to like lower leagues, and it's all pretty much all of these players have done that.
You know, we were talking about strikers on Wikipedia who've got awful goals to game ratio.
Yeah.
I bet if you looked up Ali Adier's goals to game ratio, I don't remember him ever scoring a goal.
The thing with Ali Adier was he'd always do really well in like a League Cup game, and you'd be like, well, I'll tell you what, if he's done this against Rotherham in the League Cup, what is he going to do in the Premier League?
Jeremy Ali Adier, who eventually ended up at West Ham. I think it's worth pointing out. Do you know the thing about, I remember Ali Adier, he went out with a model, didn't he? He had that, what's it, like Layla or Lila? He had a quite famous girlfriend.
Leilani.
And then that was a very exciting time as a West Ham fan.
Leilani just was available on a free transfer to 1998 as well.
Yeah, I don't remember Ali Adier scoring for us. But again, more dross. North to East London. Come on in.
To you as well.
Devil Suka. I mean, going back to the eight, like Liam Brady, we had Hartson off. Yeah,
Ian Wright,
obviously, yeah.
Laughing all the way great to the Hampton Park.
Yeah. Nigel Winterburn, we could go on and on.
So you found it, Michael.
Yeah, so for a centre forward that played 29 league games for Arsenal, he scored a single goal, went to Celtic, didn't score a goal, went to West Ham, didn't score a goal.
Wow.
Scored 2 on loan at Wolves in 14 games. Found a bit of form at Middlesbrough. This is way past the 90s, but 11 in 78. And then he just plummets down.
11 in 78,
he's found a bit of form.
Do you know what?
Almost 1 in 6.
I'm sure that he popped up. Like, they do like these Legends games. We played AC Milan a couple of seasons ago, played Real Madrid this season. And I'm sure Ali Adier started the game at the Emirates at right back. I'm really sure he did. Right.
Legends in the loosest sense of the word.
I was like hungover, like looking on Arsenal.com. Like, is Ali Adier right back?
And Michael, feel free to Wikipedia Leilani, see what she's up to now.
A goal record's better than Ali Adier's.
Next up, Bobby Gould tells us about his spell at West Brom and the time he signed Stuart Pearce.
Let's have a few words on your clubs after Wimbledon. So we've got West Brom for a period. Not the happiest time. What was wrong? What went wrong at West Brom?
I didn't settle it. It was something within the infrastructure of the club. And when the chairman goes into the press conference and says, oh, this is Bobby Gould, the new manager of the football club at West Bromwich Albion, but I didn't vote for him.
Oh my God!
Wow,
that...
what a vote of confidence that is.
That's a start, isn't it?
So I had a torrid time.
We spoke to Frank Skinner, and he said at one game, I think it was away to Shrewsbury towards the end of the season.
I'll tell you the story, okay? No, he's not telling my story. This is my story, not his. Okay, I've gone there, and I had a nightmare. So. All of a sudden, the lads are doing the warm up. Said, "Gaffy, you've got to get outside. You've got to see what they got for you." It was a coffin. And this coffin. It was with all the West Bromwich Albion supporters, and it had R.I.P. Bobby Gould.
Oh,
rest in peace. They wanted shot of me. They wanted me out of the way.
Do you think Alan Taylor organised?
No. There is a follow-on. There's a follow-on. So we're talking now, where are we talking? 91, 92? 1990, 91, 92. So anyway, so I go to Coventry. I enjoy that. I have a good time. We're back at Coventry. And then I go up to watch a player playing for Shrewsbury. And I'm in the boardroom because they think I'm looking at the player and everything. So all of a sudden, the chairman of Shrewsbury comes to me and says, "The groundsman would like a word with you." I says, "Serious?" He says, yeah. So I went outside. The groundsman says, "Oh, I've got something for you in my shed." He walked me down. It was that bloody coffin.
That's it.
He kept the coffin 6 years.
After 90 minutes of sheer hell, you're gonna get thirsty. This is new isotonic Lucozade Sport. It gets to your thirst fast. Isotonic means it's in balance with your body fluids.
One of the high points, you signed Stuart Pearce, you plucked him from obscurity. How...
I was in a situation of going to Coventry. Anyway, so I'm struggling for a left back. I says, "Bostick," I says, what you got in your little book? He says, "I was a lad at Wealdstone." "Oh, yeah." He says, "Yeah, he's funny enough," he says, "they're playing at Yeovil tonight." Well, this time I was living in Portishead in Bristol, and I was commuting a little bit and from Coventry. So I phoned up the wife. I said, "Do you like to go out for a meal?" She says, "Oh, that's lovely. I have thoughtful." I says, "Right." So I went down, picked her up and took her to Yeovil. She says, "What kind of meal is this?" I says, "Well, you know, I want to see this player." She says, "Who do you want to see?" I says, "Well, he's a left back." Within 5 minutes, it was the old Yeovil pitch, which was on a slant like that. And all of a sudden, the Wealdstone number 3 hit the number 7. With a tackle I had never seen for a long, long time. Yeah. And the number 7 nearly landed in my lap. And I said to the good lady, I said, "We're going home." "You can't go home," she said. "It's disrespectful. I see what I want to see. So anyway, so I drove home, got up 5 o'clock the next morning, drove to Coventry, got onto the chair. I says, "I want 22.5 grand. He says, "What for?" He goes, "Oh, it's a board meeting." I says, no board meeting, nothing. I says, "I want 22.5 grand. He says, "What are you doing?" I says, "I'm buying myself a left back." He says, "Who's that?" Stuart Pearce.
Wow, from 5 minutes.
It's Omdinger.
One tackle.
Closed, shop closed. And I brought him up. I went and interviewed him with his mum, and he was a Sparky electrician. Mm. And Terry Venables had got rid of from QPR.
Yeah.
And I brought him up, and he was stunning.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman called George Curtis who was Jimmy Hill's number one, and George was he'd taken over the running of the club, you know, and he'd come up. He says, "He's in the first team on Saturday." I says, "He is not in the first team on Saturday. George, you do not pick the team. I pick the team. You just disappear and know that you've got a great left back." I kept him for 4 weeks. I kept Percy. I hid him for 4 weeks. In that fourth week, who we were playing at Highfield Road? Queen's Park Rangers. Who was manager? Terry Venables. Who was man of the match? Stuart Pearce. He was phenomenal.
And did you sell him to Brian Clough?
Pardon?
Did you sell him to Forrest?
I had a phone call. Well, yeah, so it all went on. I tell you his best position.
Mm.
It wasn't fullback. we went over to Scandinavia and I played with a sweeper. So I played somebody good on the ball. Yeah. I played two good markers. I played two wide men. And he was the third man of the midfield.
All right, yeah.
He was awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Awesome. He was back and forward, and it's a new role, and he'd rattle them in midfield, and they don't expect that, you see. But yeah. he was brilliant. He was really, really very, very special.
And finally, Gary Neville drops a bombshell that as a teenager, Paul Scholes was a player they thought wouldn't make it as a pro.
With that class of 92, so there's, you know, there's the six that on the wall there, and then there's the Ben Thornleys, and there's, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, Ben Thornley was actually the greatest of all in talent-wise. Was there anyone in the class of 92, and you don't need to name names, that you thought was shit that actually made it as a professional footballer? I bet that's a question you've never been asked.
If I exclude myself for now.
anyone who thought, no, he's not going to make it?
Yeah, I don't even need to be, I can name him. If you said to me at 12, 13, Scholesy would be one of the greatest players, I'd say, how? How? You know, he was so small, so slight, he didn't have great energy and he had no strength.
Yeah.
You could knock him off the ball because he was really slight. He had asthma, so he couldn't really run very far. He wasn't quick, he never beat you for pace. So you've got to imagine when you're a young kid at 12, 13, 14, you're playing against Nicky Butt, and Nicky Butt was an animal. You know, he'd run all over you, he'd power the strength, he'd kick you, he'd head you, he'd pass the ball, he'd run forward, and you thought, geez. You saw Ben Thornley beating players, quick, nimble, agile. Yeah, yeah. You saw sort of Bex coming in, sort of the best striker of a ball you ever saw, whipping the crosses in, that ping that he had. So you saw qualities in every single player. I say, I exclude myself. If I was a defender, I was being pushed back into defence, so it's a completely different thing. And then you look at Scholes and you just think, yeah, obviously he's tidy on the ball when he got the ball. But you just thought, how can he can't cope. Physically, he can't cope with everything that's going on around him. He sort of didn't really get into the county team, didn't really play a lot of games. So in the first year, 1992, he didn't even play in the youth team.
Really?
But all of a sudden, the year after,
yeah,
I think that was the point where he stopped drinking beer and stopped eating pies on a Friday. And he tells the story himself. He was sort of, you know, he'd just eat what he wanted. And then the transformation in two or three years was unbelievable. So you just think about it. I mean, what I would say is the club saw him as a player, though.
Yes, they spotted it. They could see it.
Brian Kidd adored him. Sir Alex said, if he doesn't become a football player, we can all pack in. And that was when he was 18. But we have sort of been with him since he was 14 to 16, 17. You're always thinking, well, you know, since our youth team, 92... It was Nicky Butt in central midfield with Simon Davis. It was Ben Thornley, Keith Gillespie and Bex.
Yeah.
Four of those five. Scholes never got a look in. I don't think he was on the bench in the 92 final. I don't think he was on the bench. So people got the class of 92. Yeah. Scholes in that 92 cut win wasn't on the pitch, wasn't in the bench. So that was to me, was the biggest shock.
Yeah.
And then you get to the end of my career and I say he's the best player that I ever played with. So if you think of that jump from being a 13, 14-year-old when you first see him, to this sort of like, you know, small kid with no strength, not great stamina, can't really run that fast, to becoming the best player you've ever played with, that's a big shift.
Yeah.
But he was never in danger of getting kind of let go, was he? Did he ever come back? No?
I wasn't privy to those discussions anyway, but to be fair, the club themselves saw the potential, the talent. Mm. So that's what clubs do. And Brian Kidd, I have to say, the one thing he was a nasty little Scholesy. He could stick up for himself. He won't back out of a tackle even though he was...
Well, that went for his career as well.
I remember him as actually a 16-year-old in the B team. He played a couple of games at left back because he couldn't. It was too much for him in central midfield. So he put him at left back, thinking actually you have to get him out of the way because we played on muddy pitches. We played against big lads. Strength and power really important. You remember when you play football when you're younger, the big lads always used to just trample all over you. And Scholes ended up getting shifted out to left back. The club themselves believed in him and knew he had growth, knew he had obviously this incredible awareness. But it's no good being aware if the pitch is muddy and you've got two 6 foot two, six foot two, you know, 15-year-olds against you. Awareness doesn't really count. The ball's stuck. It's who's the strongest, who can get it out of that mud. And this little kid from Middleton couldn't get it out of the mud, so put him at left back. You know, there's a bit of grass over there.
That was our best bits, or some, not all the best bits. That was some of our best bits. Thank you very much for listening. And as a little treat at the end, we do like to leave you with something from Desert Lynam's album of poetry. What a career. Skull, can we have a number, please?
I'd like the key to the door, 21.
21.
Okay, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with our first ever Play Along quiz. Do join us for that. Until then, here's Des Lynam and Robbie Slater. See you later.
I went into a public house to get a pint of beer. The publican, he up and says, "We serve no redcoats here." The girls behind the bar, they laughed and giggled fit to die. I out into the street again, and to myself says I, "Oh, it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy go away." But it's "Thank you, Mr. Atkins," when the band begins to play. The band begins to play, my boys. The band begins to play. Oh, it's "Thank you, Mr. Atkins," when the band begins to play. I went into a theatre as sober as could be. They gave a drunk civilian room, but hadn't none for me. They sent me to the gallery, all round the music halls. But when it comes to fighting, Lord, they'll shove me in the stalls. For it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy wait outside. But it's "Special train for Atkins" when the trooper's on the tide. The troopship's on the tide, my boys. The troopship's on the tide. Oh, it's "Special train for Atkins" when the trooper's on the tide. Yes, making mock of uniforms that guard you while you sleep is cheaper than them uniforms and their starvation cheap. And hustling drunken soldiers when they're going large a bit is five times better business than parading in full kit. Then it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy, how's your soul? But it's "Thin Red Line of Heroes" when the drums begin to roll. The drums begin to roll, my boys. The drums begin to roll. Oh, it's "Thin Red Line of Heroes" when the drums begin to roll. We aren't no thin red heroes, nor we aren't no blackguards too, but single men in barracks, most remarkable like you. And if sometimes our conduct isn't all your fancy paints, why, single men in barracks don't grow into plaster saints. While it's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy fall behind, but it's "Please to walk in front, sir," when there's trouble in the wind. There's trouble in the wind, my boys. There's trouble in the wind. Oh, it's "Please to walk in front, sir," when there's trouble in the wind. You talk of better food for us and schools and fires and all. We'll wait for extra rations if you treat us rational. Don't mess about the cookroom slops, but prove it to our face. The widow's uniform is not the soldier man's disgrace. For it's Tommy this and Tommy that and chuck him out, the brute. But it's saviour of his country when the guns begin to shoot. And it's Tommy this and Tommy that and anything you please. And Tommy ain't a blooming fool. You bet that Tommy sees.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.